Ron Van Dam, living proof that there is life after 40 for retired male strippers. Shake that thing, big dog, you still got it. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one they refer to in the title. Very convenient. All right. Hey, please hold your applause. It's deafening. I appreciate your adulation of love and understanding. All right. Who ordered the tuna fish? Anybody? You? Okay. I'm handing out finger sandwiches. Guess which finger I'm talking about. All right. I assume you've heard this show before, otherwise you wouldn't venture into this area of audio pleasure, right? Seriously? Come on. Pleasure to be with you today. Yesterday, I saw my doctor changing a tire on the side of the road. You thought I had a doctor's appointment. Well, I did, actually. I had my six-month follow-up. Nobody knows exactly what that is. Yeah, every 6 months, I see my doctor as a follow-up. My doctor has more follow-ups than I have followings, which is kind of embarrassing. It's a follow-up. What'd you go to the doctor for? It's a follow-up. What's a follow-up? I don't know. They told me to come, and I went. Then, like 2 days before the appointment, they sent me like 20 texts and emails that remember your appointment. Confirm that, and remember if you cancel your doctor's appointment within a 24-hour period of the appointment, you'll be charged $5 million. Please agree to this and confirm now. Oh, God. You're very, very paranoid that I'm not going to show up, apparently. And, well, you should be. So I went to see my doctor, and I sat down on that table that has that weird toilet paper stuff on it. It's a long table. It's very, very uncomfortable. It's bad for my back, and they make me sit in the examining room waiting for the doctor to show up for about an hour and a half. Do you know why they do that? To make you really angry and anxious. And you know what goes through your head when you're sitting there in that little examining room waiting for the doctor to come in. And by the way, the nurse will take your blood pressure and all that stuff and ask you tons of questions, and she doesn't even want to date you. And the nurse, it's usually a female, that's why I say that. The nurse will say, okay, the doctor will be in shortly. When they say shortly, that means I hope you packed a picnic lunch, because the doctor ain't showing up really at all. And you sit there, and you sit there, and you sit there. So I have perfected the sitting in the examining room by yourself anger management theory. And here's how I do it. Well, I start off by reading all the paraphernalia on the wall that tells me just how sick I could be, but hopefully are not. It's got stuff on the wall. Please wear a mask unless you're a Methodist. I don't know. And it's wash your hands before you touch yourself. And if you have pain in your neck, you're probably going to die. It's got stuff all over the walls to read. But then when that runs out, there's nothing to do. So you start thinking in your head, you know, and you start getting angry. That's what happens. You start getting angry. Like, and what you say to yourself in your head is, you know, my time is valuable too. I understand I'm waiting for a doctor that is trying to treat other patients and has overbooked all the time. It's not the doctor's fault. It's the facility's fault. But I'm sitting there and you are wasting my time. I should be charging the medical facility for wasting my time. You asked me to come here at 8 o'clock in the morning. I came here at 8 o'clock in the morning. You put me in this little room, and now it's been a half an hour, and nobody's showing up. And you feel like opening the door to the examining room, because they closed the door. I don't know why, just so you can breathe the stale air. You feel like opening the door and going, hey, hey, I'm in here. Hey. Hey, did you forget about me? You feel actually like the doctor forgot that you were in that room. And if you didn't say something, you could be there for weeks and starve with no food and no water, although they do have a sink. You start to get pissed. My time is valuable too. I should be charging you like you charge me for your time. I should be charging you for my time. I got here on time. I came through with my part of the bargain. Where is yours? Well, we did weigh you, Ron, when you came in. We did weigh you. What am I, cattle? What am I? What is this, like a 4-H club thing? What are you weighing me for? Well, you know, if you're overweight, we're not going to deal with you. That's what it feels like. So I'm sitting in there in the examining room, and I'm starting to feel very slighted and very misunderstood. Like I'm a nobody. I'm just another piece of crap. And I'm sitting on that table, and my back is starting to hurt. Then you feel like, all right, you're going to make me wait in here? I'm going to do some damage. I'm going to do some damage. You know those little, on the wall, they have a little dispenser with those little ear cup things, you know, when they check your ears. And by the way, they don't check my ears anymore. I mean, they used to. No, they don't. Yeah, they take those little plastic cones and they put them on this stethoscope thing or something, and they shove it in your ear to see if you can see directly through your head to the, you know. So, you know, if you get angry at the facility, just start licking those things. Yeah, that Ron, that's disgusting. Do you actually do that? No, but I think about it. Mm. Then they do have a sink there. I wash my hands, wipe them on the wall, that kind of thing. You know, you just want to get back at them somehow. You know, you're wasting my time. You're degrading me by making me sit there all by myself for half an hour. I'm going to do some damage. I'm going to do some damage. Yeah. It's not fun. Finally, the doctor comes in and says, hi, how are you? And your immediate response is, what do you care? You made me sit. Your people made me sit in here for half an hour. How am I? I'm pissed. Then they take your blood pressure. It's through the roof because you're all upset. I think they do that on purpose. And then the doctor asked me 1,000 questions about my personal life. And apparently I can't ask the doctor any questions at all about their personal life. Ron, how many alcoholic beverages do you have in the space of a week? Let me ask you, how many do you have? I'm not the patient. I think tit for tat, you know what I'm saying? Ron, how many drinks do you think you have a week? I can't even count. But they're for recreational purposes, not for medicinal purposes. I don't drink to forget. Well, how many drinks do you have a week? I don't know, I forget. Eventually, after these I say to the doctor, what the hell am I doing here? Nah, I don't know. You know, this is what they tell us. We got to see everybody every 6 months. I don't know. I guess business is bad and got to put the kids through college. You know what I'm saying? And then they order a blood test for me. I don't mind the blood test so much, although I do. I don't like to be poked and have blood drawn out of me. I don't think that's proper. But what I find most fascinating are the people that work in these medical labs where they take the blood tests. The person behind the window, they give me a little plastic cup and they say, could you fill this up for me? And I said, sure, I'll run down the hall. Where's the water cooler? No. We want you to urinate in the cup. Oh, okay. Do that all the time, sure. Middle of the night, no problem. And I fill it up for them, happily too. I'm like a dispenser, you know. Hey, you want some? I got plenty of urine for everybody. Who wants it? Who wants some? Give me some cups. I'll fill it up for everybody. Come on. Come on, I got plenty for everybody. Come on, give me some cups. So I fill it up, and then they have a screw top lid, which is very convenient. And you put it in a paper bag, and then you hand it to the person behind the counter, who inevitably doesn't say anything, but in their minds they're saying, ew. You know, you feel like turning around and the other people waiting to get their blood test. You feel like saying, hey, I got more urine. Anybody? Anybody want some? Got more left. Plenty where that came from. So I hand it to the nurse. But then because I have a very, very expansive mind, I'm wondering who deals with that? Who sits in the back there behind that glass partition? Somebody must be a urine person, you know? Like, what do you do with the urine? Do you just throw it out? No, we have to test your urine. Wow, we have to see if there's anything in there that shouldn't be in there. Well, like what? Like pieces of food? Like corn? Like, what are you looking for? Who tests my urine? Whose job is that? I guess there's a name for that besides urine tester or sommelier. I mean, there must be a name for that particular expertise. There must be a course in medical school. Want to be a doctor? Yeah. Want to be a nurse? Yeah. Want to be a nurse practitioner? Yeah. You want to deal with the urine and test it? No. I think testing the urine is a step up from working in a hospital and changing bedpans. I think it's the next step. Can you imagine, you know, you go home after work, you know, and your spouse says, could you shower, please? You smell like piss. Yeah, you know. I did about, I think I went through about 60 samples today. Oh, would you like me to cook dinner for you? No. Wash your hands at least. I don't know what they do with that urine. I guess they open up the bag like they're about to have lunch and they take out the little plastic cup that I have dealt with. I think they're wearing gloves at the time. And they take it out, and I guess they pour it into a something that analyzes my urine and tells me, like, when it's good. But I never see that on the, you know, the doctor never reviews that with me. And says, Ron, you know, we had your blood test. Everything's good. We checked your urine. You're down a quart. We found something strange in your urine, like car keys. What the hell is that? Your urine is very cloudy with a chance of showers. I freaked out once because when I was urinating many, many, many times a day, the color was like a dark orange, and I thought, oh my God, I'm peeing Tang. Tang. All right. Millennials. Tang was a drink that we had back before the turn of the century. Boy, when you say before the turn of the century, sounds like it came from medieval times, doesn't it? Back before the turn of the century, I was told by the king to gather all of the knights and to conquer the Manskindens family. And I was beheaded by the royal jester back before the turn of the century. Yeah, we had a drink called Tang. It was a powdery, sugary, disgusting-tasting thing, and you put it in water, and it looked like my urine at that time. It was orange-flavored. Tang was the original. It was orange-flavored. It was disgusting, but it's all we had. It's all we... Back in the turn of the century, all we had... My sword got caught in the stone, and the dragon came after me, and I said to Merlin, you know, this is ridiculous, Merlin. Back to the turn of the century. But anyway, yeah, so I guess my urine's really fine. My urine, I called it urine. I guess it's really fine, and everything's good. I mean, what more can one hope for in life than to have a good, healthy urine? I think that's everything. So I did say to my doctor at one point, my shoulder hurts. And my doctor said, how long has your shoulder been hurting? And I said, probably about a week. And the doctor actually said to me, well, Ron, you're getting older. Anyway, anything else? That's not a doctor response. You're supposed to diagnose me. Diagnose me. What's wrong with my shoulder? Well, you know, I don't know, but your urine's good. All right, fine. That's enough. My doctor always asks me if I get enough exercise. And I always say, no, I don't. And the doctor says, why not? I said, because I don't want to. Well, your urine is good. All right. I have a guest coming up shortly. Not that the guest is short. I am not sure about that. Could be, but I am not sure. I'm very tall. I am 6'3", at least last time I checked. So people that are shorter than me are exaggeratedly more shorter than me by a lot. So if you're a short person, I view you as being a little bit shorter than you actually are because I'm viewing you from a higher location. That probably is the same where a short person looks at me as a tall person and says that person is abnormally too big. So it's a matter of perspective, I have found. What I find most interesting is when tall men, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", I think 6'3", 6'4", for a tall person is kind of average. And I'm in that category. I remember, I see some people walking down, I'll tell you that story later, I don't have time today. But I see people walking down the street and there's this like really tall guy and he's like holding hands and walking down the street with this really very short female who's very attractive, very, very nice most likely, but just about clears 5 foot, maybe, you know, is in that 5 foot area. That's like at least a foot smaller than the big guy. And I'm sorry, but the female always looks like his daughter. And I it doesn't matter how old she is, always looks like his daughter. And then her head comes up to just above his crotch. And I'm thinking, well, very convenient for various physical types of encounters. But otherwise, I'm not going to bend down to kiss somebody. Come on. That's a lot of work. Give me a kiss. All the way down there? Oh, God. All right. Hold on. Here I come. That's just a lot. It's a lot to handle. Can you believe you're listening to this show voluntarily? It's not like you were forced to listen. I know you can leave any time. I get it, and I appreciate it. All right, just saying. We're going to take a short commercial break, and then my guest will be joining us. But first, there's this.
Hello, this is Father Mike Slannery from the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church here in town, and I'm excited to tell you about a thrilling new addition to our monthly Friday night bingo game lineup. In addition to classic favourites like Coverall and Four Corners, we'll now be adding Full Contact Bingo. That's right, Full Contact. That's where the friendly community game you love meets the hard-hitting action of football and hockey that you crave. Is Mrs. Smith about to call bingo before you? Hit her with a cross check or crash her into the boards. I should mention that all full contact games will take place in the street hockey rink behind the parish function hall where the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Fighting Sons of Leviticus hold their matches. Protective gear is recommended and weapons are not allowed. And if you feel bad about taking out a friend or neighbour so you can win a few bucks at the bingo, I will be on hand to take your confession. That all starts next Friday night at the Parish Hall at the Our Lady of the Sacred Spatula Church, 27 Eucharist Way, right downtown. We'll see you there.
Lorraine Martin joins us now. She's the President and CEO of the National Safety Council. It's a nonprofit, thank goodness. Thanks for being here today, Lorraine.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
Well, I have noticed that the summer months are here. Revelation to me. And we're talking about summer safety, which is like some people say, oh, summer seems so easy. There's no snow. What's the big deal? It is a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal, Ron. And there actually are increased risks in the summertime, which include all kinds of things that we might not think of heat illness. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, and I'll come back to that, the traffic is actually more deadly on our roads. Yeah. And there's a lot of other issues that we face when we're out and about with friends, having fun, that we don't all times during the year.
Yeah, as the environment changes, unfortunately, that's what's happening here. The summers are getting hotter, and it's a little bit harder to navigate in the area that I live in. They forecasted more heat waves, days over 90 degrees, than ever before. So it's a concern.
Yeah, and no matter where you live in the U.S., heat is something you've got to pay attention to. And heat-related illnesses can really creep up on you quickly and be very deadly. Literally, hundreds are seriously injured or die from heat-related incidents on and off the job every year. And as we hear those horrific stories of kids sometimes dying in hot cars, that's sometimes almost 40 or more a year across the nation. So it's so important if you or someone you loved or you're witnessing starts to have signs of heat illness, it's really important for you to take breaks, you know, hydrate, wear sunscreen, get in the shade, and make sure that you're looking for those signs because they can be really serious, things like stroke and dehydration and other kinds of things that can be life-altering.
Yeah. I mean, a good population have dogs and pets, and just as dangerous, perhaps more so for them.
It is, for sure. We got to take care of all of our loved ones.
Yes, all of the ones that have a life and breathe. Okay,
for sure.
Yeah. You alluded to traffic earlier on, and I kind of started our talk that way by saying in the winter you've got snow. You figured, well, that's like hazard snow and ice. Oh, my God. Summer, you don't have that. But I have noticed people are driving crazy in the summer. What's going on with that?
Well, I don't know what's causing people to drive crazy, but I do know what the data tells us. And it does tell us that our roadways are more deadly in the summer.
Yeah.
And in fact, from May to August, we'll lose 3,700 folks on our roadways during those months. And if I put that in context, and this is really just a really sad statistic for me to share, but 46,000 people lost their lives in 2022 on our roadways. And that is equivalent to 100 people dying every day, which would be equivalent to a commercial airliner, a regional jet crashing every day.
No.
It's a very, very important thing for us to pay attention to. It's really important for us to do safe driving behaviors of slowing down, seatbelts, driving sober. We know what those look like. And in the summers, it's so much more important for us to pay attention to those.
Wow. You mentioned like 4 months of danger, and which there's 8 months that you're not talking about. So that's a lot. That's like, wow. Okay. What other things, what other issues are related to the summer?
The one thing that I would mention is, and we talk about roadways, and we're almost always, what comes to mind is a car and people in a car. But it's also really important to understand that there's been a very significant increase in the deaths of pedestrians, cyclists, folks on their mopeds, folks that are on and using our roadways but aren't in a car. So it's really important to also pay attention to those. And we have also a lot of resources to help parents, because one of the riskiest things that our teens do in their lives is get on our roadways. So at NSC.org, we actually have some materials that can help parents not only model that behavior, but then help their children with that as well.
Us human beings are drawn to the water when it gets summery outside. And that's, I guess, a whole nother number of hazards involved there.
There certainly are. Anytime you're in an environment that you're not typically in and perhaps haven't practiced all the skills for, it's important for you to take that extra care and make sure that not only you can be safe, but then you also prepare yourself with having things like first aid training and making sure that you have the skills if somebody around you in the environment, wherever it is struggling, that you can come to their aid.
Sure. And then you got hurricanes and tornadoes, and, I mean, they become plentiful.
They do. Our world can be crazy at times, and the summer is especially exacerbated. So knowing how to keep yourself safe no matter what that environment is critically important.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being aware and being careful. That's fine. And that's what I am all the time, unfortunately, to the excess, but anyway.
Well, that makes you a safety hero, sir.
I'm a safety hero. Now, what is it? What is the definition of a safety hero?
You know, a safety hero is anyone who has safety at mind for themselves and others. And we also love to applaud folks that will tell their stories, because unfortunately, probably everyone you know has a safety story, either personally or of someone in their life that has been injured and perhaps life-altering or perhaps even worse. I will tell you, one of the things that is front and center for many of our loved ones right now is the issue of our opioid crisis and the fact that we are having so many accidental overdoses. I gave you a statistic a moment ago about 100 people dying on our roads every day. More than that a day are dying from unintended overdoses. And in the workplace, the number of people who are dying from an overdose has increased by 500% since 2011.
In the workplace?
This is something, 500% in the workplaces. So this is the time, Ron, where we talked about having skills and making sure if you're in a waterway, you know how to help someone if they're not swimming well.
Yeah.
We also need to know how to help folks not die from an overdose. And there is now, thankfully, an over-the-counter medicine for that. It is a opioid overdose reversal medicine, and it enables you on the spot with naloxone to be able to save someone's lives.
Wow.
I urge everyone to get trained. I urge every workplace to have in your first aid kit. It's so important that we start having this at hand so we can turn the tide of these tragic overdoses.
Wow, that's something I did not know. That's pretty cool. All right. Okay, where do we go for more information? I'm sure there's a lot more, and we want to refresh ourselves every once in a while, too.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. It's NSC.org for information on all the things I just talked about. And if you are a safety hero, like I hear you are, Ron, and you've got a story to tell, we also have what's called Safety is Personal. And it's a chance for folks to tell their stories and so that we can learn from them and make sure that it doesn't happen to others. So safetyispersonal.org is another place I'd love to have some of your listeners come find us.
That's how you learn, by example. And
it sure is.
Yeah, that's how people stop smoking, too. Like, oh, okay, people are dying. I get it now. All right. Lorraine, thank you so much for your time today. Lorraine Martin, thank you. All right. That'll do it for me today. I'll be back again on the next weekday that comes around with a brand new show. But until that time arrives, I wish you peace. We'll be right back.